really happy to be here today. Before I begin, I want to dispel any thoughts that you might have that I'm a professional speaker. I'm not a professional speaker. I'm not going to worry about having great points for you to write down, although I wouldn't mind if you wrote down some. I'm basically going to just speak about something that really means a lot to me. Obviously, the family dinner. Is there an echo? Is this okay? Okay. Lastly, I'm not here to make anyone feel guilty, okay? Remember this. I'm not here to make you feel guilty. All I want to do is to inspire you to realize what a great gift that you have that you can give your children. And even if I cause you to add just one more dinner to your schedule this week, I will feel like I've succeeded. Also, I'm not really an extrovert. I'm an introvert. And while I don't mind speaking, it's not something that I love doing or seek to do. And I will actively run the other way. I have an uncanny knack for knowing when Marcia's on the prowl and she's coming down the hall. Isn't this true? And I will sense that she needs a speaker, wants somebody to pray, give a devotional. And I'm like, I have an appointment. Oh, I need to go to the bathroom, you know. So as far as I can remember, this is the absolute only time I've ever volunteered to speak. Never have I ever volunteered to speak. So you know that it means a lot to me. At the top of your, let me see if I wrote it down, at the top of your sheet. Oh, here it is. Good. I wanted to write it down for you so you could take it home because I thought it was a great opening. The author, Miriam Weinstein, said, "What if I told you there was a magic bullet, something that would improve the quality of your daily life, your children's chances of success in the world, and your family's health? Something that is inexpensive, simple to produce, and within the reach of pretty much everyone." You guessed it. The magic bullet is the family meal. So back in the spring, Mike and I went to a marriage conference, and the speaker, Dan Allender, spoke about your family of origin. I'd never heard that phrase before. Basically means the family you grew up in, and how important it really is to your adult life. Not that I think you need to wallow in your family of origin, but knowing the good and the bad of it and working through it can be very helpful to your adult life and how you are as a marriage partner and how you are as a mother and a parent. So what your mother did or didn't do modeled to you what you thought as a child was the right thing. So then in the fall, I joined a group that was to help you learn to counsel others and to come alongside people. And this group met together, fleshed out the questions, who am I and how do I relate to people? Because obviously, if you don't know how people are relating to you, you might or might not be able to help them. But one week we had the exercise of making a poster or a collage that represented our family dinner table. And I thought to myself, oh, how fun. This will be so much fun. And my parents weren't perfect, and my mom and I had some issues, especially during my teenage years. But the family dinner table was good, really great. So I grew up in Brazil, and help was easy to get, inexpensive. So we actually had a cook that cooked dinner every night and would serve us and clean up, but we would still eat together. My mom was a good cook, and she would cook on the weekends. And I remember happy times when my dad would make fudge on the weekends. And I don't even know if he remembered. I mean, he's gone now, but he would not remember making fudge with us. But the thing is, do not underestimate how little things really mean a lot to your kids, because I remembered my dad making fudge and that it was really good. So in my group, though, the only person that had a good experience with family dinners was the leader, who was my age. And I have to tell you, I was shocked. I mean, maybe I'm naive or sheltered, but I thought, first of all, my heart just grieved when they talked about their family dinners. I thought, surely that isn't so. I mean, it just was not positive at all. You know, the one father would make the children meals, but the mother never came to the table. Another one said we didn't even have meals together. If we did, there was cursing and shouting, and so we would get our food and go to our bedrooms. And then another one said, I was an only child, so we didn't sit down. They didn't sit down with me. And I thought, that is just sad, because an only child, I mean, is a family. And my husband and I, we're alone now. It's just two of us. But when the news comes on, we pause it, and we eat our dinner at the table, because it's just a sense of this is what you do. I mean, it's the civil thing to do, you know, to sit and eat and talk. It would be easy to just turn on the TV. I have another person in my extended family that says, I can't remember one meal that I ate with my parents. I ate in front of the TV on a TV tray. And I don't want that for me. I don't want that for you. So I'm just trying to get that across, that it's not good. So when we moved to the States, we moved to Dallas, where my mom started cooking every night. My mom and dad are Southerners. My dad really liked his food. So my collage, you know, I had so much fun. I made this nicely set table. My mom always had napkins and cutlery and glasses and bowls for your salad. And if we had hamburgers, she had a little bowl for ketchup and a little bowl for mayonnaise. And you know, I did not go that far when I started raising kids. But I will venture to say that everyone did that. They may not have always had happy meals, but everyone sat down every night. There might have been tension in some homes, you know, alcohol or cursing. One friend said that his dad was in the military, and they all sat around the table. He's about my age. But the dad ran a tight ship, and nobody wanted to sit by the dad. And everybody tried not to attract his attention. Another friend said her family meals were fine growing up, but then during the Vietnam War, her dad would get mad and he'd yell at the TV about what was going on in the Vietnam War. And this was back before you could pause it. So that was kind of, she couldn't get away from it. My mother had five siblings. She grew up during the Depression. And she said to me one day with a sad face, she said, I was just another place at the table. And that just makes you grieve for them. She didn't feel loved or special. Eating together isn't, the actual eating together isn't necessarily magical, but it's what it can produce. Bridget Lacy wrote a book called Sunday Dinners, and she said the family dinner, it's a chance to connect with others to nourish the body and the soul. So Mike grew up in the 40s and 50s, my husband. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and I will tell you without a doubt, every single person sat down at night and ate dinner. If you were out playing, you know, softball or whatever you were doing, 6, 6:30, whenever it was, you came in, you sat down, you washed your hands, you sat down, you ate dinner. Unless there were extenuating circumstances, everyone ate dinner at night with their family. I don't think I've polled one person my age that did not sit down and eat dinner with their family. So indulge me a little bit as I reminisce about what we ate. This was fun for me. There were no fast foods. In Brazil, there definitely wasn't fast foods, but my parents would take us all out to a restaurant every Saturday called The Corner, which we really enjoyed. When we got to Dallas, there were no McDonald's, no Wendy's, no Chick-fil-A's. We did get a Jack in the Box in Dallas. Do you remember Jack in the Box? It was not that great, but, you know, we had to go. And my parents could afford to go to dinner. We'd lived in Rio. And so, I mean, it wasn't like we weren't used to going out to dinner, but people just didn't go out to dinner that much. You went out for special occasions, like your birthday or your anniversary. We also didn't have all the wonderful ethnic foods we have now. We ate pasta, but we didn't call it pasta. We had spaghetti and meatballs, which my parents called Italian. And we had macaroni and cheese, and that, so those were our pastas. We didn't even have pizza, which I can't even imagine what would we do without pizza. I didn't have pizza until I was in college, although I'm sure, you know, maybe in Brooklyn or Chicago, you know, they had pizza before we did. I never heard of fajitas until I was a young mother. I ate tacos for the first time when I was in college. We would eat fried chicken, mashed potatoes, pork chops, green beans, biscuits, gravy, salad, you know, not too many desserts, and not too much fish unless it was fried shrimp, you know. So my son-in-law took my granddaughter, Maren, to the daddy-daughter dance, and I said, where'd you go, Maren? She goes, we went for sushi. And I thought, it's a different world nowadays, you know. And she doesn't just get, you know, California rolls either. She gets all the wild stuff, you know. So we eat sushi and Thai and Mexican and Indian, and the world has become a small place for sure. Our example of eating around the table really goes back to Jesus. You will read that he ate with the disciples often, and he ate around the table. When he had something important to say to them, he taught it to them at the table. And so I have some verses for you and some little fill in the blanks there. Matthew 26:20 says, when evening came, Jesus was reclining with the 12, and while they were eating, he said, I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me. He taught about communion while eating around the table. Matthew 26:28 says, while they were eating, Jesus took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to his disciples, saying, take, eat, this is my body. Then there's the account about the road to Emmaus. The story goes that the two disciples were walking to Emmaus. They were talking about what had happened. Jesus had been crucified. They were obviously very sad. Jesus came up to them, but he kept them from recognizing him. He asked them what they were discussing, and they told him the story that Jesus had been crucified. And as they reached the village, they urged Jesus to stay with them. Luke 24:30 says, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. And then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. Later, they told the others and said, it is true, the Lord has risen. And then verse 35 says, then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he took the bread. There are other accounts about food and gathering around the table in the Bible. The Passover is obviously one. The marriage feast of the Lamb. I think the dinner table in your home, as crazy as it might be at times, can be a beautiful picture of how the Lord deals with us and how he dealt with his disciples. Think about Thanksgiving. Why do we just love Thanksgiving so much? We had an English friend come visit, and he was so excited because he was going to be here during Thanksgiving. Now, he wasn't at our house for the actual day. He went to another family's house, and they were not actually original Americans, but he came back and he said it was just dinner, and he was disappointed. And I had so much fun thinking about it because I thought, it is not just dinner, you know. Besides the fact that it's the kickoff to the holidays, it's, you know, the Macy's Day Parade, the turkey trot that people that like to run do, and then the Black Friday that people like to shop, you know. But it's about the food. Why do we love it so much? And I thought about it. It's because we're all together. We've all anticipated gathering together. We all have a place at the table. That is huge, to be wanted, accepted, to have a place at the table. We are special. And the food has been prepared with so much care. I mean, I spend weeks figuring out menus and trying new things, and then I always go back to my old, you know, the old standbys. But and it's a feast. It's all you can eat. And see, that's a picture of the Lord. He is abundant. He's lavish, and he loves us, and it's all you can eat. And we want our kids to have that feeling when they come to the table. Deuteronomy 6:4-9, you girls know these verses. You know, I think Sarita referred to them last time we met. You can insert them anywhere, but I'm going to tell you how they spoke to me. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them. You can write that in. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. So you've seen these verses many times. As you read them, you may be thinking, if I'm lying, walking, rising, where is the time for me? Well, I wrote down, newsflash, this season is not about you. It's about them. You will have many, many times to go out to dinner in peace and go where you want to go, do what you want to do. I'm just going to tell you flat out, this is their time. No do-overs. This is your chance to launch these little people into the world, which is hostile, you know, and hard. it's a time of unselfishness. This was a rude awakening for me because I'd been pretty spoiled and pampered growing up. I'd like to think that I wasn't a spoiled brat, but I'm not sure if I was or wasn't. But became a Christian at age 16 and, you know, believed the Bible and I went to church and I thought I was really a pretty good girl. But if you asked me, if you really kept pressing me, do you think, you know, do you believe Jesus died for you? Yes, I do. You know, I believe the Bible's true. Do you think you're going to go to heaven someday? And I'd say, I would have said, nobody ever got that far. Gosh, I hope so. I mean, I've tried to be pretty good. I, you know, done the things I thought I should. But I didn't realize what Jesus had done for me, that he died on the cross for my sins. And that if I accepted him as my Savior, you know, I would have that relationship with him and would go to heaven someday based on what he did for me. So my life kind of changed at that point drastically. I'd been really into music and journalism and I liked all kinds of things, but I wanted to study the Bible. So I went to Bible college. I met Mike at 20. I married him shortly after I turned 21, which is really not very old, but back then it was kind of old. And we left Florida when I was 22, and we moved up here. We didn't know anybody. He didn't have a job. We had a bed and some pots and pans, and I was leaving my mom and my dad and everybody I knew. So I cried all the way out of Florida. But I did really have a sense of this is my destiny. I remember crossing the Virginia state line thinking, I'm a Virginian. My children are going to be born in Virginia. And so I had Kelly, my oldest, when I was 23. And I had to be on bed rest the last 6 weeks. Sorry. And I was feeling really sorry for myself. You know, the whole birth process, if you've never been sick and had anything other than chicken pox or measles, is overwhelming. You know, I came home and I was like, you know, just the indignity of, you know, and plus I had blood pressure issues and they thought I had toxemia. So during the birth, I had like 4 interns, you know, down there. And because it's a teaching hospital and I'm like, great, you know. But anyway, I came home and I was traumatized. And as I sat down to my favorite dinner, Polynesian chicken at the time that my mom had prepared, Kelly starts screaming her lungs out. And, you know, way deep inside this little, and I just thought, are you kidding me? I can't even sit down and have dinner after all I've been through. And I was mad. And Mike says, I think you're going to spoil her, you know, don't go get her. And I'm like, I can't eat dinner with her screaming her lungs out. So I went and got her. And I, you know, nursed her and ate my dinner. But I thought, I can't even eat my dinner after all I've been through. And the answer to that is, that's right. You know, Kelly's needs are more important than your needs. And I went and got her. I nursed her. And welcome to motherhood, you know. So when my mother left, this is a true story, 2 weeks later, I seriously wanted to go home with her and leave baby Kelly with her father, because it was all his idea, you know. And Mike had to sit me down and nicely and gently say, it's time to grow up, you know. And he was nice about it, and I thought, he's right, it's time to grow up. So if this convicts you in any area, whether it's feeding them dinner or feeling like you are trapped or stuck or I can't go anywhere, your time will come. You won't be stuck or trapped. And if this is where you are, then I will gently say to you, without trying to make you feel guilty, receive that if it's the Lord convicting you. So back to Deuteronomy. These verses were what the Lord used to speak to me about homeschooling my children 1 year. These verses also convicted me when I was driving my son David to school every day for 3 years. One day I just thought, I'm driving in the car with him every single day. I could pray with him. And so we started praying together. And, you know, at first it's a little awkward. You know, he'd say, well, what do you want to pray about, Mom? And I'd tell him. And he'd say what he wanted to pray about. And then one day he would pray, and then one day I would pray. And it was very simple, very short, but we did it for 3 years. And, you know, it just blesses me that he's 32 years old and he has little children and he's doing that with his children and he believes in the power of prayer. And I thought, thank you, God, for just you know, I did something right. I did one thing right. So so I want these verses to speak to you in connection with your children. A dinner table is time. It's like sitting in the car, you know, driving in the car. It's time that you can give them a life-giving gift. And it's not just about eating. It's not just about filling your tummies. You know, it's giving life to them. So those are my stories and my verses, and I'll just, I'm a practical person pretty much, and you probably know all this, but I, you know, maybe some of it hasn't really, you know, sunk in. But the benefits of eating together is it's a time to reconnect. Even my husband and I, like I said, we're alone, you know, it's just the two of us, but and sometimes we won't even talk that much because we're kind of talked out, but we're sitting there together and we're reconnecting. It's a time to relax, and you should relax. Several people told me their mother fed them dinner while she was standing up. And I was like, what? I never heard of such a thing. But she would stand in the kitchen, and they'd all be seated. And I think the one guy older than me, he said he'd come in. She'd say, what do you want to eat? And she would fix him whatever he wanted to eat and give it to him. And she would stand the whole time. And then she'd clean up. And then later she would eat. And I thought, you know, missing the point here, you know. So it's a time to recharge. So reconnect, relax, recharge, tell stories, and catch up with a sense of who we are as a family. Also, kids like to tell stories. They like to hear stories. For example, I'll say, did you ever hear about how your dad and I met? Do you know how I chose your name? You know, David was born at night, and all night long, you know, Mike thought he was going to be an Andrew. And the next day, he comes in, and I said, I really want to name him David. He's like, okay. And I said, because David was a man after God's own heart. So David's been hearing that his whole life, that he was named David because of King David, who was a man after God's own heart. Genesis 18:5 was a verse that spoke to me too. Abraham and Sarah were visited by celestial beings, so angels. Abraham rushed into Sarah and told her to bake some bread. And Abraham told them, let me get you something to eat so that you can be refreshed and then go on your way. We forget because we eat probably too much and we eat before we get hungry, but food is really for fuel, to give us energy. I've been stuck at the supermarket before at like 1 o'clock and I haven't eaten lunch and I'm starting to just not feel good, you know. And I need to be refreshed. I need calories. I need some protein. I need some fiber. I need some carbs, you know. But the idea of refreshing your children, I remember moving to Florida at the end of ninth grade. So I went into high school. And it was really hard. I mean, nobody was mean to me. They were friendly. But everybody already had their friends. It was the end of ninth grade. And they were nice, but I felt kind of alone. So third day, my dad dropped me off for school. And I just couldn't get out of the car. And he said, Kay, you know, come on, get out of the car. And my dad was a real softy. I'm sure I made him mad at some point in my life, but if I did, I never knew it because he never got mad at me. He says, get out, you know, you need to go to school. And I said, nope, I just can't. So he turned around, drove home. And and I thought, I just sat in the car. He got out and went in. I thought, my mom is going to kill me, you know. And I sat there and sat there. And I finally went in, and this was, you know, she didn't often do this, but she flew at me and hugged me and comforted me. And that night she made my favorite meal. It wasn't Polynesian chicken because I actually gave her that recipe, just for the record. But whatever my favorite meal was at the time, she made it for me. And I felt refreshed. I felt loved. I felt cared for. And the next day I got up and I went to school and I, with no complaints. So remember that kids, and I know a lot of you have little kids, but it can even be in the nursery. You know, kids are buffeted all day long by things and people, and they feel insecure and they feel rejected. You know, somebody has gone off with another friend. And I think dinner time is a sacred time. It's a time to draw your children in, to sit down, look them in the eye, and let them know that they belong. Number two, it prevents destructive behaviors. If you look up on the internet, my goodness, secular, Christian, it doesn't matter. They will all give these statistics. Now, you know, it's a general rule. It wouldn't happen every time. But research shows that frequent family dinners, five or more a week, are associated with lower rates of smoking, drinking, illegal drug use, as compared to families that eat together like two or fewer times. The National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse says five times a week is really the optimum. And, you know, you can regulate it. You can have a family breakfast or, you know, you can work with it depending on, you know, what your family looks like. Number three, it improves their grades, especially if it's a nutritious meal as well as a bonding time. I thought this was interesting. It boosts your vocabulary. There's a phrase that's called rare words. And if a kid knows one of the rare words, which means a word that's not, like, say, if he's in second grade, second graders wouldn't really know that word. Well, if you're read to at night, you might know 143 rare words. But if you eat dinner with your family every night and your parents or not yelling at you or standing in the kitchen and not talking to you. You know, if they're talking to you, 1,000 rare words. And I thought that was interesting because the purpose is to talk with them about things and to ask them questions and, you know, not talk down to them. Number four, it saves money. And I know some of you might disagree. You go, oh, by the time I make this dish, I've bought all these ingredients, and then they've gone bad. But it does save money. You just have to be a little organized. So meals purchased away from home will cost more than those prepared at home. And it saves time, too. By the time you get all the kids in the car, strapped in, you go to wherever you're going to go, you get out, wait for your table, you order. You know, it would have been easier to have a plan and save going out for special. I don't think I wrote it down anywhere, but like one in five eat a fast food meal in their car every day and other statistics. And I thought, well, I don't do that, but even I do that now. You know, you're out and you think, oh, I'm just going to grab a bite. And you start keeping track of it, it's going to really add up. Number five, they become self-sufficient, especially if you can include them in the planning and the preparation. Small children can tear lettuce, put out the silverware. Older children can pour the milk, peel the vegetables, and mix the batter. And I didn't do this because it was easier to do it myself. That's not the right attitude because they love doing that. They think it's so fun, you know. And it gives them a sense of, I can cook, you know. My daughter Kelly has a huge vegetable garden. She has tomatoes and lettuce and zucchini and you name it. And the kids just love her vegetable garden. They go down there and they pick all the stuff for the salad and they're popping little cherry tomatoes in their mouth like they're M&Ms, you know, because they picked it, you know, off the plant. And Kelly's assistant has two chickens and they will take their little basket and they will gather the eggs. And really, when you think about it, we tell them that chickens lay eggs. Have they even computed that the egg, you know, fry, you know, it's like teach them, you know, about their world, you know, so that they can see how their food is coming to them. Six, this is important. They learn manners and they learn how to be civilized human beings. And they, you know, please pass the potatoes. May I please be excused? May I have some more milk? And even Holland, 2 years old, so sweet. She'll go, Grammy, Mo, milk. And I go, you want milk? And I'll give it to her. And she'll go, thank you. And I'll say, you're welcome. And, you know, they get used to being a civilized human being. Number seven, they learn about their world, different foods, different customs. The Soviet Union was very strong when my children were growing up, you know, in power. And we would talk to them some night at dinner, you know, just about the loss of human rights and how our country was different and we didn't believe the way they did. And I think Kelly was about 12. All of a sudden, she burst out and she goes, well, I'll tell you one thing. When I grow up, I am not getting a job in Russia. That's for sure. And we were like, okay. You know. Lastly, they learn gratefulness. Hopefully you can all bow together and thank God for your food each night. They need to know that this food comes from God, that he's provided for you, and that you are, you know, it's all from the Lord. And I remember one night David came in, he was mad, he was like in high school, I think, and you know, bad day, people being mean, he drove home, and there was just a bad day, so he's just venting and venting, and he's not usually like this, and he goes, and then he glares at us, and he goes, and don't ask me to pray either, because he wasn't about to pray that night, he wasn't real grateful, I guess. The obstacles, this is a big one, and I recognize it. People will say, I can't cook, I'm not good at it. So I am sympathetic to this. I realize that having a talent for cooking helps, but it's not the whole ball game. I have two friends, Susan and Jay. They don't like to cook, but they are my age, so they raise their families. But Susan said, and the more I thought about it, I thought it was so profound. She says, I cook because it's part of the job I signed up for. And I thought, that is really profound. She also realizes that it's a good thing to do for her family. Jay doesn't like to cook, so when David was in junior high, he said, Mom, you need to ask Mrs. Wiegold for her recipe for chili. And inside I was thinking, well, good grief. I mean, my chili is great. I use my fancy garlic presser with my fresh garlic, and I mince my onions with my special Cutco knife, and, you know, I soak my beans all night, and I make my own chili seasoning. But he just kept after me. So I said, so this recipe for chili, how do you make it? And she said, oh, it's just so easy. I brown the ground beef and I pour 2 cans of tomatoes in it and 2 cans of chili magic. And I stir it and heat it. So I came back to David and I said, that is not a recipe, David. And you know, I'm still, and he's like, yes, it is, you know, because he likes to argue with me. So he said, it is a recipe and it's really good. So I had to swallow my pride and I made it. Yes, it was very good. And if I'm in a hurry, I'll do that. I'll still make my own. But my point is, Jay served it for dinner. Her family loved it. They all ate together and that's great. You know, she also has another great recipe that she gave to Katie that Katie gave to me. It's just a big hunk of meat in a crock pot with cream of chicken soup and onion, you know, an onion soup packet, and you cook it all day, and it makes this great gravy, and the meat gets all tender, and it's really, really good. So I would like to say a word for the humble meatloaf. I make a good meatloaf as well as chili, and most of the guys in my family like it. The girls, not so much. So I say to them, can't you think of it as a big meatball? It's just the same thing that's in a meatball or a hamburger. And but anyway, one night, and this was really funny, Katie dropped Holland off. She said, just feed her whatever. She's not going to eat anything. You know, she doesn't eat. She's 2. So I said, I made meatloaf, macaroni, cheese, green beans. And I said, would you like some pasta? And she goes, no, I don't want it. And I'm like, okay. And I said, do you want some meat? And she kind of looked at me and like, meat? What is this meat, you know, of which you speak? And I'm like, I have the fork and I'm realizing my opportunity. So I go, and so she opens her mouth and I stick the meatloaf in. And I'm not kidding. She was like you plugged her into a light socket. It was like, oh my goodness, you know, meat. And she kept saying, Grammy, mo meat. And she'd go, you know, and I kept spooning it in. And finally, I cut her off because I thought, she's going to get sick. I mean, so, and I needed to save some for her dad, who was coming in later. So he comes in like a couple hours later. And she's like, Daddy, Daddy. And he picks her up and he sits down. He's going to eat his dinner. He eats a bite, puts his fork down. She grabbed his fork and started spooning the meatloaf in her mouth. And he was like, goodness. And then she's eating his green beans. And so I couldn't resist sending Katie a picture, you know, like, because there's this picture of her, you know. And but anyway, the point is to the story is that sometimes it takes at least 8 times, they say, 8 to 15 times to get them used to eating something they're not used to. And it's easy to just to fall back on the, you know, the Go-Gurts and the chicken nuggets and the, you know, they get tired of that, you know. And keep trying, you know, because you never know. You might, and Holland does like meat, you know, and so second thing might be our schedule is not good. Sports, you all probably aren't as involved in it yet, but sports can really be a problem. When my kids were in school, practices were in the afternoon, but they'd be home for dinner except for when they had a game. But sports are just out of control around here. And sometimes you just need to make a choice. You know, when I was in high school, I chose Bible study over the Kietz Club where all the popular kids were, because they met on the same night. And I thought, in the long run, Bible study is going to be better for me than being in Kietz. So sometimes you might have to say, you know, we need to sit down as a family. I realize that work can be an issue. Sometimes men get home late. You can try giving them a healthy snack at like 5 if the husbands are getting home at 6. Even if they're not at home for dinner, if you can sit down with them and try to eat with them, that's good. Now, if you yourself work, like I have a friend that works full-time, and it's hard for her. Her problem is she has trouble thinking of things to eat. She'll say, what did you fix for dinner? And I'll say, we had taco salad. She'll say, oh, I love taco salad. Why don't I? But even if on a Sunday, you just kind of roughly plan it out. You know, we didn't have much money at all. So, I mean, I literally clipped coupons on Sunday afternoon out of the paper. And if chicken was on sale, Giant, we had, you know, I'd buy chicken for the week. And get this, we didn't even have boneless chicken. Do you remember we didn't even have boneless chicken? We had to buy the chicken and boil it and, you know, take it off the, you know. So, and now there's all these, like, cut-up things and prepared things and, you know, lots of little cheats. The fourth thing is, you might say, my kids are picky and they fight at the table. The answer is not to throw in the towel and just say forget it. Now, it's been interesting this week because Katie and her family have been at my house all week. And, you know, it's been a while since I had little children, obviously. But I'm, you know, I got a real renewed sense of appreciation for what you go through, you know, because, you know, it's chaos at dinner time. And, you know, you want to eat and enjoy it. And there's a tendency to want to feed them first and get rid of them, but they love to sit at the table with you, you know. And but anyway, keep working on it. If they only like a couple fruits and a couple vegetables, that's okay. They don't have to have tons of variety. I am not a big proponent for making them sit there until they finish their dinner or their vegetables, because I think it can get to be a control thing. And I love all foods, and I was never made to eat anything, and if I didn't want to. And Mike's father was made to eat all his vegetables, and he didn't like hardly any vegetables. So it can sometimes backfire on you. So I just have two last things. I had to fit this in somewhere because it's the funniest story of our growing up times. David was in Sunday school with his teacher that was real, you know, lovey and touchy-feely, and so they'd have their snack, and she would say, she'd go around the room, she'd go, thank you, Jesus, for our snack, and I just want to thank you for David. He's so sweet. I just love him so much, and I want to thank you for Becky, and then she'd say something nice about Becky. I just love her so much. So Mike, we're all at the table, Mike says, David, would you pray for us? And he's like 8 or so, and he goes, dear Jesus, thank you for this food, and thank you for Mom fixing this food. I just love her so much. And for Dad, he plays basketball with me. I just love him so much. And Katie, you know, he said something nice about Katie, and he said something nice about Megan. He goes, I just love her so much. And I just want to thank you for Kelly. And then he goes, actually, I don't like Kelly very much. And so we are dying laughing. And I mean, even Kelly thought it was hysterical, but Megan and Katie have always been able to, I mean, they can get laughing about, you don't even know what they're laughing about. So they stick their heads under the table because they want to look at each other and, you know, can you believe he said that? And then David, seeing that they're gone, that he looks under the table and he sees them laughing and he's, Katie, Megan, and he stomps off, and then Mike's saying, son, get back here at the table, you know. But Kelly had gotten into a, 13, 14-year-old phase where she thought she was too cool for everybody. And so she really had to, win them back because the three of them didn't like her very much, they said. So I will end on this. I sent my kids an email, and Kelly, who actually writes for a living, so she obviously came up with something good, but I thought it was really sweet. And if there's something you want to discuss in your group that she said, just jot a little note. But she said, "For me, Mom, I loved the dinner table because it was something consistent. I could always count on it. It was like an anchor that was always there. Even if I wasn't happy with the meal, like when you had minced onions in the meatloaf, that used to drive me crazy because you said they were so small, you can't even taste them. But I could always taste them. It was an ever-present routine, and while I was a kid, I didn't understand how special it was to gather around a table every night. But now that I'm older, I realize all those hours piled up into a major piece of my childhood that was full of laughter, stories from the day, complaining, sometimes fighting over which seat we got to sit in, David praying and confessing that he didn't like me very much, learning to appreciate different kinds of food, even if we didn't like them all, learning to appreciate that we even had food since so much of the world didn't. Another thought is that we learn to be polite and appreciative even if we'd rather have something else. When you're at a restaurant every night or ordering takeout or grabbing from the freezer, you get to choose exactly what you want. But when you sit down at the dinner table, you have to learn to eat what is there, whatever was given you, and which I think is a really important thing, because in life you don't always get to choose what you want. If we grew up getting exactly what we wanted every night, that would not have served us well later in life. Even if we decided not to eat what was there, you all taught us to do it politely, and we learned what it meant to go without, which again, I think, is an important life lesson. The dinner table also gave me a love for hospitality and presentation and nourishing others. I love to feed people at my table. It's hard to know what growing up would have looked like if we hadn't had that consistent time with each other. The knowledge that you took the time every day to nourish our bodies, it's all so embedded in me, I'm not even sure I know all of what I gain because I don't have the absence of the dinner table to compare it to. But I'm really grateful for it. So I will end with that. I'll just pray real quickly. Dear Lord, thank you for this time together. Pray you just encourage us all to realize what a tremendous privilege it is to be able to feed those people that we love that are so dear to us. Help us to have a renewed vision for doing it. I pray that you would bless each lady as they leave. And I pray you bless their families and help them to just have a greater sense and an awareness of these little people that are growing up in a world that is different than theirs, different than mine. But we trust that they will all be strong Christians and strong in faith. And we pray this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.